Everybody knows Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was a successful guy. For someone who died 232 years ago, it's pretty notable that most people have heard and recognize his music. But what's also worth mentioning, he made a lot of money from his career as a musician. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we're looking at the money factor in the music business. Mozart's dad can be credited for setting up the young genius with a business model for success. Leopold Mozart started both Wolfgang and his older sister, Nannerl, at a very early age, teaching them piano, violin, and later music composition. Wolfgang composed his earliest compositions as a child. His sister insisted she learn composition as well, but since she was a girl, her musical career was eclipsed at age 18 because she was supposed to get married and have children. A subject for a future podcast of its own. So Leopold took Wolfgang and Nannerl on tour, showing off the prodigies to all of Europe. So by the time Wolfgang ripened at the age of 18, he was already well known throughout Europe, and he embarked on a career as a freelancer. He didn't want to stay a court musician with a modest salary. Instead, he performed his own works and the works of others, as he was often commissioned to write music. His career wasn't the normal path of musicians of that era. So Mozart actually made a lot of money for a composer of that time. He sometimes made 10,000 florins a year. So what's 10,000 florins? Well, it equals about 5,000 US dollars. And back then in 1780, what was that worth? Well, 500 florins a year was considered excellent for a wealthy person, and 25 florins a year could support a blue-collar worker for a year. So Mozart made 400 times that, or 20 times what a wealthy person making 500 florins a year would make. Yes, Mozart made a good bit of money, but he also spent it. Well, good for him. If you ever watched the movie or the Broadway show Amadeus, you know that he was a pretty successful opera composer. And again, this was the lucrative path. Today, Mozart's piano sonatas, chamber music, orchestral works, and piano concertos are all well known. But the operas and the commissioned works were what brought in the money during his lifetime. So let's follow the money in today's music world. In pop and rock music, singers get the top bill. And sticking to classical music, it's opera singers that make the big money. More than solo instrumentalists like Perlman or Ma, or conductors like Dudamel or Meisel. When Pavarotti played with the Pittsburgh Opera Orchestra in 1992, we asked each other, as sort of a joke, how much does Pavarotti get for a concert? And the answer, $100,000 and all he can eat. Because his green room had a buffet for him to choose what he wanted before his concert. A minor aside, it's called the rider. An artist can request anything in his rider. Frankie Valli always put a bottle of Glenlivet 15-year-old single malt on his rider, and then his manager usually got to take it home. An artist generally puts in the rider whatever he needs in the green room before the concert. Is it water, champagne, caviar? Whatever they want, they usually get, or they can ask for it. So they say Pavarotti was worth $275 million at the time of his death. So something's not adding up if it's $100,000 per concert. Let's take Leonard Bernstein, conductor and composer. What was he worth at the time of his death? They say $10 million. So that's a big disparity. And maybe you're starting to see my point. So Pavarotti's career was going along very nicely, but many people point to his 1972 performance of Daughter of the Regiment by Donizetti at the Met. What was so special about that performance, and why did the audience go absolutely nuts? Well, the Donizetti piece has these 9 high Cs for the tenor, and Pavarotti performed them exquisitely, pronouncing himself the tenor of the century. Seas that thrilled the New York opera crowd, who are possibly the most sophisticated opera audience in the world, at least one of them, and certainly the most trendy crowd for a rising opera star. Or maybe the crowd just took themselves the most seriously. But in any case, there were no less than 17 curtain calls. And Pavarotti's career skyrocketed after that point. That's opera for you. And those high Cs, they have another name. Money notes. And I don't think I have to explain to you why they're called that. Those Cs were worth probably $1 million each, if you consider the impact they had on his future. The term has been around for a long time, and Mark Trofka mentioned it on the podcast when we were talking about the opera chorus.
When a singer is singing in their money zone on a high note, they cannot hear anything else because, you know, it's like if you've ever screamed, can you hear anything else while you're screaming? No.
So money notes are usually at the top of the singer's range. And they're especially thrilling in opera because there's no microphone or auditory enhancement for the voice. When you think that entire music halls have been built to resonate those notes, the Benenum Theater was built this way. The design company from Boston made a miniature model of the hall made out of mirrors, and using a flashlight, they mimicked the sound waves and analyzed how the voice would project in the hall. The result was narrowing of the hall, losing a few hundred seats, adding a wooden proscenium above the stage, and round wooden baffles on the sides. The $29 million spent on the renovation were dedicated to making a world-class opera venue. That would also work for everything else. Opera and money just go hand in hand. In a soprano's range, they're expected to be able to sing from middle C and 2 octaves above. Anything outside that range is extra. Above that is the coloratura. Mozart knew his diva's ranges very well, and he knew how to showcase the voices to get them to the money notes. You can't just start on the high notes, obviously. You have to work your way up. He wrote the famous Queen of the Night aria for the magic flute for Josefa Hoffer. She goes up to a high F. To give you both context and a professional term, middle C is called C4, and 2 octaves above is C6. The F above C6 is F6, and that was the note Mozart showcased in the Queen of the Night. Another soprano of the day was Aloysia Weber, who would become Mozart's sister-in-law. And Mozart wrote an aria for her, which was inserted into Gluck's opera Alceste, something that was done a lot back then. And this aria goes one note higher than the Queen of the Night. It goes up to G6. It's like saying your speakers go to 11, over the top. It's all about the money note. The name of the aria is Popoli di Thessalia, meaning people of Thessaly, and it's the highest note ever written for human voice, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. However, there was another piece that was written for Aloysia Weber that was up to A6, but we don't give that piece credit for some reason. Maybe she never sang it. Probably Guinness just got it wrong. I'm going with that.
If you can see, yeah, the numbers all go to 11. Look, Right across the board. And most of the
amps go up to 10.
Exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
It shouldn't always be about the highest note going one higher. I mean, it excites the fanatics, but the real music lovers of music and opera dig the notes that sound the best. Meaning for a singer and the tessitura. And the term applies to instruments too. The cello's A string is called la chanterelle in French, meaning it's the singing string. And the tenor's tessitura also lies within the same range of the cello and its singing range on the A. Although the cello can be warm in all its ranges, the A string seems to hold the most striking phrases. So a cello's lowest note is C2. That means that there's one octave lower on the piano. The tenor's tessitura is C3 through C5, and C5 is on the A string of the cello. The money notes on a cello are from A4 to E5, or somewhere in that range. I don't know of any composer that wrote specifically for a certain cellist's money notes, but I believe they think of the instrument having a certain sweeter spot that they write their phrases or they aim for them, or just finding a way to show off the instrument's capabilities. When writing for voice, composers are definitely writing for a particular singer's tessitura, and then their money notes are given special care and attention. And for this reason, different operas are appropriate for different voices. That's an entire podcast, and I'll have to bring in a guest for that one. Something to look forward to. So we started and ended this podcast with Mozart, because he was a pretty great guy. And let's just get one thing straightened out. He was not buried in a pauper's grave. Made for a better ending to the story, made it a real tearjerker. But during that time, they would bury people together, and later he was interred, and his bones were put in his own grave. That's a much better ending. Long live Mozart. That's it for this week, and thanks for listening. Hey, you can send me an email at my podcast email if you like. I'm at acellerandocast@gmail.com. And don't forget to check the show notes at acellerandocast.com. Please share this with anyone you think might enjoy it. And as always, thanks for supporting live music, and we'll see you next time.